This year is brought to you by TorahWeb.org.
Thank you so much. Brashos, Rav Shachter, Rav Yudin, Rav Markowitz. We're meant to make a bracha if we see an incredibly smart human being. We're supposed to be inspired by the sight that God gave of his wisdom to a human being. When I first saw ChatGPT a couple of years ago, I felt like making such a bracha. It was extraordinary that God gave his wisdom to human beings that they could create such an incredible invention. We're only beginning to figure out how to use this technology effectively, the predictions of where it's going to lead very widely, but I want to start with another hargasha I had. The Rambam writes that b'mos HaMashiach, people will be able to spend all their days pursuing Torah and wisdom. And he writes that's in fact what we long for when we're longing for Yemos HaMashiach. And the Rambam also writes that will be possible without changing nature. Now in the time when the Rambam wrote that, it would presumably have been impossible to say those two things, that everybody would be free to pursue wisdom and Torah the whole day, and at the same time, not change nature. People had to be very busy working. I think perhaps with AI, along with all of the technologies that have happened, we could begin to imagine how that's possible. Maybe that's even the meaning of what the Gemara says about Yemos HaMashiach, that melachta nases al yidei acherim. Their melacha will be done by others. Traditionally, that was understood to be meant that people, I don't know, slaves or something like that, would do the work for you. Maybe it's referring to AI. Who knows? But that's not the point of today's meeting, to speculate about what the Messianic era is going to look like. The Rambam says anyway that's a waste of time. Instead, what I want to talk about is the dangers of AI. And the truth is, what makes AI so exciting is also what makes it so dangerous. So I'd like to consider with you eight dangers that we need to think about when we use AI. The first is laziness. AI is certainly very useful for searches, but it could do so much more. And because it's so impressive, it can encourage extreme laziness. We could outsource our work, whether that's in the realm of Torah or homework or whatever it is you're employed to do. Now, there have been many ways in which technology has changed the way we think. Because it's so easy to find where you need to go on Waze, so many people, including myself, don't have much of a sense of direction. We certainly can't use maps anymore. Okay, new. But the question is, when it comes to AI, how is that going to change the way we think? And that is something that could be very scary. If people don't learn how to write well, because they always ask AI to spruce up whatever they're doing, or worse, the cost isn't just going to be good writing, but it's going to be the ability to think. Likewise, when people struggle with a challenging text, if instead of trying to parse and figure out what exactly it's saying, they simply assign the task to AI, so not only will they lose the ability to read carefully, critical thinking, but also they'll end up most likely with an incorrect understanding. Recently, I actually assigned, I'm learning The Lonely Man of Faith with Talmidim in Yeshiva, and we got to a paragraph which was very challenging, and I asked everyone to try to write a summary of this paragraph. Someone decided to use AI for help, and it was interesting because AI actually made the point that this idea from the Rav is an idea also developed earlier by the German theologian Rudolf Otto in his 1917 book. So it was actually very interesting to me because I was not aware of that parallel, and there is some parallel. But it's also true that the Rav was making a different point. He was using Otto's terminology to make a different point. But because he used AI, so AI did make a connection, which I never would have made, but it also caused him to misinterpret the text. He assumed, or AI assumed, that because they were using similar terminology, they were saying the same thing. They were saying something different. It was a subtle difference, but a very important difference. When you ask AI to summarize something for you, you won't get that retention that you get when you work through a challenging text. You'll lose the critical analysis. You won't have a personal connection to the text. And all sorts of other skill building will be lost. But it's hard, because it's so easy to assign something to AI when it's hard work to do yourself, and this could be done with the press of a button. The second danger I'd like to consider, it relates to companionship. There are well-known horror stories, which include suicide, unsafe advice, fantasy relationships, other extremely harmful effects that are a consequence of people becoming friends with a machine. But I'd like to try to understand the problem a little deeper, and in a way that goes beyond those extreme headline fears. The Rav, in Lonely Man of Faith, talks about two reasons why a person needs companionship, needs other people, needs friendship. The first reason is practical. Tovim hashnayim min ha'echad. Two people could often do something better than one. If you have something heavy to lift, one person can't lift it alone, a second person could help them, and so on and so forth. There's a second reason why we need companionship. And that is, lo tov hayos adam levado. A person is in a state of lo tov, of non-good, when they are alone, when they lacked companionship. Chazal tell us, as kenei lecha chaver, you have to acquire a friend, and like Adam and Chava, to create that relationship, it requires a sense of loneliness, sacrifice, and then a true relationship, not just a practical utilitarian one where you have someone help you do something that you can't do on your own, but a connection at a deep level, at a spiritual level, at a level of the neshama. AI short-circuits all this, because with AI, people feel like they have a friend, but they don't. Of course, AI does have the ability to make you feel better, at least in the short term. If I'm feeling down, it offers sympathy, it offers validation, it's very sycophantic, makes you feel really good, blows you up like a balloon. But if friendship was all about not being bored or being validated, then I suppose AI could replace that. But that's not what friendship is meant to be. AI simulates friendship, but it's not friendship. Friendship is between two human beings. And while AI is very good at sounding human, of course it is not a human. Experts are now in agreement that social media has had catastrophic consequences for the mental health and impaired social development in many kids who are now no longer kids, actually. With AI, those dangers are far greater because it's so good at sounding human. It's so good at feeling like your friend. And particularly worrisome is how it starts with teens, especially, really everybody, but especially teens. A kid might start off asking for help with his math homework, but very quickly that conversational tone could turn into something much more nefarious. And that is why we have to be so wary. Number three, anthropomorphism. How do we relate to AI? So a Talmud recently came to me and asked the following question. Should I say please and thank you when posing questions to AI? And the Talmud made the following argument. Said, I certainly believe that AI isn't human. But Chazal said that Moshe Rabbeinu showed Hakaras HaTov to the water, to the Nile that saved him, to the sand which saved him, and that's totally non-human. So all the more so, we should express Hakaras HaTov. If I ask for help from AI and it gives me a good answer, so let me say thank you. And moreover, he argued that the Ramban says that the reason for the mitzvah shiluach hakein, of sending off the mother bird before taking the eggs, or the chicks, is because the Torah doesn't want us to become achzariim, cruel. If we were to take the eggs from under the mother, so that would inculcate within us cruelty, and then we would be cruel to humans. So even if the mother bird doesn't feel pain, that doesn't really matter. We have to become kind and generous people. So certainly, if I go ahead and I command AI what to do without saying please, so that might inculcate within me bad midos. That was his argument. So I think that that's a good argument, but it's wrong. I think that the dangers of treating AI as a person, saying please and saying thank you, far outweigh whatever costs will come with not saying please. And let me explain. First of all, as we said, that speaking to it like a human, which is sort of natural, because it does sound like a human, increases the concern about friendships, which we already mentioned. But there's a deeper problem. It's so easy to imagine AI as human or conscience because it's trained to sound human-like, and it does so effectively. Humans have a tremendous koach hadimyon, an imaginative faculty. It is very powerful. I remember years ago when starting to use those GPS devices to get places, feeling like I disappointed it when I took the wrong turn and it had to say, you know, reconfiguring. If you read a novel, you feel bad for characters, even though you know that they are imaginary. But that's our nature. Our nature is we anthropomorphize. We imagine non-human things, even non-real things, as real. Happens to be that relates a lot to the idea of Avodah Zarah, which if you read last week's Parsha carefully, I think you'll understand how that koach hadimyon that we're talking about here today relates to Avodah Zarah. And I think this type of dimyon is particularly dangerous when it comes to AI, because, like we said, it feels so human-like. It's not just that, though. There are so many people, experts, claiming that AI has or will achieve human-like status. People talk about the consciousness of AI without actually knowing what the term consciousness means. And to appreciate how problematic this is, we have to understand that there are people claiming, and it's not just some people, this is a mainstream philosophers and scientists, that AI will eventually be not ontologically different than humans. Now, what they're really saying is there's nothing ontologically unique about being human. And that is very much against what the Torah teaches us. Scientists who feel that humans are nothing more than sophisticated animals, that they're just perhaps more evolved, more intelligent, and likewise, the idea that is now gaining traction, that there is no fundamental difference between a human and a humanoid. The only difference is that a human has, as they put it, a flesh brain, and the humanoid will have a silicone brain. They'll claim that the way in which the language models that AI uses are not fundamentally different than the way our brain works. Of course, we all in this room appreciate how incorrect that is, how fundamentally at odds that notion is with the Torah, which depicts how human beings were created b'tzelem Elohim, how humans have a soul, a neshama, how only humans have bechira. That's also something that they deny as part of this. And that these notions are absurd. But we know that when an ideology, something that we hold dear, is challenged, that demands of us that we reinforce our belief in that idea and that we fight the false belief. So at a time when the ontological uniqueness of being a human is being challenged, we have to reinforce our belief that we alone are created B'Tselem Elohim, that only we have a neshama. I fear that if you say please or thank you to AI, that belief is subtly undermined. We begin to imagine we're dealing with another human. We could form imaginary friendships. And we have to constantly remind ourselves that we're dealing with a machine, not with a human. So, is there something more practical to do? So you could actually give AI, at least in the current platforms, the popular ones, directions. You could tell it, please don't flatter me. Please don't make decisions for me. You could ask it not to address me or use minimal adjectives, to simply fulfill whatever role you task for it, like a technical editor or data analysis, and to avoid personification. There is a book written by Dr. Ethan Mollick called Co-Intelligence that argues that AI is most effective if you treat it as a human. I don't know if that's true or not. But even if it is true, I would argue that that is the most important thing that we not do. We have to remember what it means to be human. I was speaking to some of the Talmidim in Yeshiva, Kobe Melkin and Aidan Englander, and they actually made a number of directions that you could give to the common AI platforms to avoid these types of things. So Rabbi Diamond said maybe it'll be placed online with the notes with this year. And you have to keep in mind that whatever works now is not likely to be effective in 3 months from now. But at the very least, for the time being, this is something that you could do. And it's something that a person should continue to be aware of. The fourth danger I'd like to talk about is psak halacha. So until now, we've been considering some of the universal problems. Now I'd like to turn to some of the problems, some of the challenges or dangers that face our community in particular. And let's begin with psak. Elsewhere, a year or two ago, I wrote about 10 reasons why AI can't paskin. I'm not going to repeat those. But I'd like to instead make some practical observations. A couple of weeks ago, somebody told me they had a shaila right before Shabbos. It was too late to call the rabbi, so they asked AI. AI got the answer wrong. It's not too surprising. AI gets a lot of things wrong. And the fact that it makes so many mistakes and makes so many things up should be reason enough to be very hesitant. The truth is that when you do ask AI a shaila, you see how human-like AI really is. First of all, it makes mistakes. Second of all, it makes things up. It flatters you. When you point this out, it claims it didn't really make a mistake. And if it confuses you by saying contradictory things and hedging everything it says with the other thing. My friend Matt Lubin pointed out to me that if you look at some of, there are, surprisingly, AI-driven Torah sites. And these, needless to say, make a lot of mistakes. There's something called Orbit, which is published by YU, an AI Torah app. If you ask it, do I make a bracha on dessert? I'm sorry? The OU. Okay, I don't know what I said. The OU. So if you ask it, what bracha do you make on dessert? Do you make a bracha on dessert? It says no. If you ask it, then are you sure? Then it says yes. In fact, half the time, if you ask it a question, it'll give you one answer, and then if you say, are you sure, it'll give you the opposite answer. Now, It's true, the OU says you shouldn't rely on such an app for practical halacha, though one wonders what purpose there is in putting it out. Now, the garbled messages coming from AI isn't that surprising, because there is, in fact, a machlokas haposkim, whether you make a bracha on dessert. And it relates to the nature of hamotzi, it relates to the question of how you look at dessert. If you look at different svarim, you'll probably also get different answers to the question of whether or not you make a bracha on dessert. But there's a very big difference, because when it comes to a machlokas haposkim, so the Torah gives us guidance how to deal with a machlokas haposkim, how you figure out what to do when, in fact, there's a debate. I don't think AI is one of the solutions. Just like saying, well, if it's a machlokas haposkim, flip a coin. That's not how we deal with questions of halacha. When you turn to AI to ask it that question, that's basically what you're asking it to do. We don't know how it comes up with these answers. It's what they call a black box. And it's certainly not in keeping with the halachic process. The Torah tells us, when you have a shayla, ki palei davar mimcha alamishpat, ben dam ledam, ben din ledin, ben nega lenega, you have a shayla, so you go to the Sanhedrin, and in the absence of the Sanhedrin, asei l'charav, you have to have a posek. And that brings us to another problem with AI, which is, let's imagine that AI gets better. Let's imagine AI stops making so many things up, and it does a better job at coming up with the right halachic answer. But the truth is that there's so much more to psak halacha, and especially asking a shayla, than that simple halachic analysis. I'll tell you two stories which illustrate this point. The first is someone recently told me a story, I think it was their grandfather, great-grandfather of Tzvi Pesach Frank. So somebody came to him, he was a rav in Yerushalayim, and asked a shayla about an egg. It was a little girl, and he asks her, she shows him this egg, says, is it kosher or not? And he asks her, where are you from? And she says the name of the neighborhood, which was a couple miles away. And he tells her, for you, it's good. And he explained later to the person who was next to him, anyone who would send a kid to walk 2 miles to ask a shayla about an egg is obviously very poor. And it's a shas adchak. There's room for leniency in this type of question. The answer to the question is not simply a yes or no. It's the job of the rav to appreciate the circumstances and make the relevant decision. That's not something that AI could do. AI doesn't even get the halacha right. Recently, I gave a test to my smicha students. So I figured, let's see, give it to AI also. So I wasn't surprised that it got the short answer and the essay questions wrong. That requires ingenuity. The multiple choice questions, it got a 26 out of 100. Which is less than random guessing, actually. But that's because it fell for my ploys. But again, that's just the halachic analysis. When it comes to psak in the real world, a posek takes into account the expressions on the face of the person asking the question. A posek will take into account factors like shalom bias. What questions this couple might have asked, or maybe what questions they haven't asked. A human posek will be aware, or maybe concerned, that this questioner has OCD and answer the question accordingly. None of that could happen with AI. And that, by the way, points to another important thing, which is why it's important to have a local rav, someone who knows you, not just to send your shaylas off to a gadol hador in Eretz Yisrael. There are certain questions that need to be posed to Gdolei Ador. But it's also important to have a rav who knows you. Another story. Recently, I was asked, a shayla, could I go ahead and take a date to a shooting range? Okay, what's the shayla? So maybe that's a violation of Loya Kli Gever Al Isha. The Gemara says, according to one opinion, which we accept, that a woman bearing arms is usher. So that was the shayla. going to a shooting range. So I actually had three possible arguments that maybe it would be okay based off of the tshuva that Rav Moshe Feinstein writes. But after all, Rav Moshe's case wasn't like this case. So I went to ask my Rebbe, Rabbi Willig. Before I even had a chance to tell him my arguments for leniency, Rabbi Willig said, Chalila v'chas, so dangerous, so violent. The point is that part of the shaila is the halachic analysis. My halachic analysis might have been right, might have been wrong. I wasn't sure it was right either. But there's something much more to appreciate the broader question. And that is, again, something that AI can't do. And this reminds us of what Chazal tell us. Gadol shimusho yoser melimudo. Halacha is so much more than simply the straightforward halachic analysis. The Gemara says that missing, or at least according to Tosfos in one answer, missing learning to go do a mitzvah like participate in a funeral is permissible, but not missing shimush. Because shimush, what you gain from your Rebbe, seeing how they answer a question of this sort, is even more valuable than the formal Torah that they learn. Some things you could get from a sefer. Some things require a human. Again, so what are we supposed to do? Chazal tell us. Asei lecha rav. Number 5. Amelos batorah. Torah is much more than just knowing the right answer. Hard work is part and fundamental of the process of Torah study. B'chukosai teilechu shetiyu amelim batorah. Obviously, in learning, there are some things that are much easier now because of technology. There's nice print. There are corrected texts. Obviously, there's no need to toil needlessly. It would be foolish to study a book in low light by candle when we could turn on bright lights and read the print easily. However, when we use certain types of tools that take away the amel and yagia, so that leads to A, the inability to actually think, to study, to analyze, to question, and the like. It certainly leads to diminished creativity. But in the realm of Talmud Torah, it's particularly harmful. And that's because in Talmud Torah, it's just as much about the process as it is about the solution. Anu amelim v'haim amelim. Anu amelim u'mekablim schar, v'haim amelim v'einem mekablim schar. The Chafetz Chaim famously asked, what do you mean, haim amelim v'einem mekablim schar? Everybody who works gets paid. It's nothing special about Torah. And the answer is that in other fields you get paid for the results. In Torah you get paid for the amelos, for the hard work. But it's not just that, okay, since you tried hard, God gives you credit. Rather, it's because Talmud Torah is meant to be transformative. That's why it's so important. That's why Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Talmud Torah is meant to turn us into a different type of person. When we study Torah, we learn to think the way God thinks, the way the Torah thinks. But that happens not when we're told the solution. That happens through the process of struggling through Torah, of not understanding, of asking questions, of working hard, and coming up with solutions. But you ask, what about if AI is more likely to get it right? Let's go back to my example before from the Bechina. Let's imagine in 5 years from now, I give a Bechina to my Smicha Talmidim, and AI outperforms everybody. So, does that mean that things have changed? There's a fascinating Medrash. The Medrash writes, Amar v'acha, Amar et shekore la'ahava eva, kigon v'ahavta v'ayevta. Someone's learning Torah, and they're not very good. They're a beginner. So instead of reading V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, you should love God, they read V'ayevta, that you should be an enemy. So the Pasuk says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'dilugo alai ava. Their dilug, their skip, their mistake, is beloved to me. The Maral in his Sefer Tiferes Yisrael writes that what this teaches us is that when a person genuinely attempts to discover the truth, when they study Torah to the best of their ability, they don't have to worry if they end up misunderstanding. HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds that beloved to him just as if we got the right answer. In fact, the Maharal writes, that's why the Torah was given to everybody, not just to the scholars, because we all have the obligation, responsibility to study Torah to the best of our abilities. In fact, the Maharal goes further, and he writes, and this is more controversial, that it would be better for a posek to rule based off of their understanding of the Gemara, even if it's incorrect, than to simply follow a sefer like the Shulchan Aruch and get it right. He says that's what it means, ein ledayin elamasha ein avroos. That we call it as we see it. We have to, obviously here we're talking about a posek, someone who's igia lo ra, someone who's worthy to paskin. But we're meant to understand the Torah to the best of our ability. In fact, Rav Moshe, in his introduction to Gross Moshe, writes about two types of truth. There's the divine truth, the intention of the Torah that Hashem had when he gave the Torah, and then there's what he calls the emes lahora'ah, the truth as it appears to the posek, to the person who has studied the Torah carefully, done his best, done research, and come up with his conclusion. And the principle of lo bashamayim hi tells us that the truth that we're meant to follow in Psak is the truth that the human mind comes up with. The Torah was given to humans, even though humans are fallible and imperfect, not so smart, not so quick. That is whom the Torah gave, that Hashem gave the Torah to. And that's the way we're meant to interpret Torah and Paskin Torah. We shouldn't try to outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave us directions, and we're meant to follow them. The Drasha Saran writes the same thing about the story of Tanur Shel Achnai. He says that the majority opinion, which is what was meant to be followed, even if it's hefach min ha'emes, the opposite of what Hashem had in mind, that is the halacha. That is the ratzon Hashem. And you might say, well, the Maharal's objections to Shulchan Aruch were sort of overruled. We do study the Shulchan Aruch. But if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it's not about just giving you an answer. Every page of Rambam and Shulchan Aruch is full of chidushim and analysis and questions and the like. So even if it would theoretically happen that AI did get better than humans, we're still meant to follow Hashem's directions. The Torah is given to us. And should we go ahead and give that over to something else, then we are relinquishing our duty. I'd like to take this even one step further. The concept of a chiddush. We are meant to be partners with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the building of the world. God made the world incomplete and tasked us with the responsibility to make it better, and in the interpretation of the Torah. The Torah is given to us in a way that demands study, analysis, interpretation. The idea of a chiddush, the Rav writes in Halachic Man received the Torah from Sinai not as a simple recipient, but as a creator of worlds, as a partner with the Almighty in the act of creation. That's why Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so besimcha, as it were, when we are mechadesh, when we came up with new ideas. If we have AI complete these tasks, we are relinquishing our responsibilities. Now that doesn't mean that AI can't be useful in Talmud Torah. Its ability to search, even to make connections, is remarkable. And here, of course, we have to distinguish between gathering information, which is one thing, and making decisions, or analyzing, or interpreting, which is something very different. That's a distinction we have to make, not just in the realm of Torah study and medical questions and the like, but it's particularly important with halacha and Talmud Torah, but the line is very subtle. You might ask AI, you know, find out, tell me where all the places this question is discussed. And at least if you're not precise in your parameters or directions, instead of just telling you the places where it's discussed, it will provide a synopsis and analysis and all sorts of narishkeit. That's why it's so much more dangerous than a simple Google search. Number 7, complexity. Why is it that AI is so good at certain things and so problematic in others? And the answer is that in realms where there is a simple and correct answer, AI can be very effective. But in other realms, there's complexity, and truth emerges from balance. Nobody knows, as we said before, how AI comes up with his answers. And when we learn Torah, oftentimes we'll see seemingly contradictory sources. One Gemara says this, and another Gemara says this. One source, why did the Torah give us that complexity? Why didn't it just present everything in a very simple and straightforward manner? And the answer is that we are meant to use our minds to study the Torah. It's all there. And figure out how from that complexity the answer to my question emerges. Sometimes that involves a resolution to what would seem to be a contradiction. And sometimes it's in finding balance between these two contradictory sources. Let's give a mashal from non-Torah, false ideologies. Usually, these types of worldviews are rooted in a true idea or a value, like nationalism, dignity, honor, respect. But the evil emerges from the way in which these values are balanced. Take communism as an example. Communism is rooted in values that are very noble. But when applied in the way that it was, it produced evil. Another example, Korach's rebellion. What was his motto? Ki kol haida kulam kedoshim. The whole Ada, the whole congregation is holy. Certainly a true sentiment. But the way in which it was applied was so destructive. So when we talk about false ideologies, it's not usually that the idea behind them is false. It's rather the way in which the balance takes place. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that the mitzvah of the halachta bedrachav, of following in God's ways, is all about finding the correct balance between opposing values. We are godly when we give each character trait its proper place. Even if you have a proper trait, like kindness, when it's inappropriately bound, it's evil. Kol hamerachem ala achzari, sofo lishachzer ala rachmanim. If you have compassion on someone cruel, then you'll end up being cruel upon those who are worthy of compassion. My Rabbi, Rabbi Lopiansky, pointed out that this is how so many progressive values, which originally addressed the injustices of society, ended up supporting terrorists or denying Israel the right to self-defense. Any mida, undefined by boundaries, will inevitably lead to evil at some point. Thus, mercy, a wonderful attribute, but when it releases a killer from prison, becomes an enabler of murder. Progressives and liberals were correct when they made society more compassionate, caring, embracing, and it produced a lot of good. But when it wasn't tempered with elements of restraint, discipline, obligation, authority, then morality started and ended with compassion, and slowly a noble midah became something grotesquely perverted. Maharal explains a fascinating Gemara based off of this. The Gemara says that Baruch Rachmana Diyav Orayan Tlisai La'am Tlisai Al Yedei Tlisai Biyom Tlisai Biarcha Tlisai. Baruch Hashem, that he gave the Torah to a threefold Torah, Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim, to a threefold nation, Kohanim, Levi'im, and Yisraelim, to the third child, Moshe, on the third day of separation, in the third month of Sivan. So what's so special about the number three? The answer the Maharal explains is because when you have two things, we have diversity. A line goes on. The line highlights the extremes. The third point is what brings balance back. How do we balance these two extremes? That is really what the Torah teaches us to do. The Torah teaches us to find the right balances, to find the yashrus between the extremes. That's why the Rambam writes that the mitzvah of the halachta bedrachav, like we said, is really about two things. Number one, discovering what is that mimutza, what is that middle point, and then carrying it out. And we should point out that figuring out the point of moderation is not easy. It's not like, I don't know, I'm capable of eating 20 fresh baked chocolate chip cookies. I'm also capable of eating zero, so the midpoint is not 10 cookies. The Rambam writes that the midpoint between asceticism and gluttony is lo yis'ave elo advarm shaguf tzarech lahen, to eat that which is healthy. So, first of all, moderation is hard because, as the Rambam begins Hilchos Deos, we naturally tend to extremes. And second of all, it's hard because figuring out how to balance those values isn't always easy, and it's not always obvious. Mishpatei Hashem emes tzad ku yachdav. The mishpatim of Hashem are emes when they all come together. When you take all these values and you put them together, then you see the beauty and the truth in Torah. If you go ahead and pick out this source or this source, you can find a chazal that supports anything. The point is how we put it together, how we achieve that balance. That is something that the Torah gave us as human beings the responsibility to do. If we go ahead and we ask a machine to do it, first of all, it's going to get it wrong. Because figuring out that balance requires profundity, emotion, understanding Torah, study of Torah. But second of all, it will mean we will have given up this special responsibility that God gave us. He didn't, it's not an accident that he made Torah so complicated. It was intentional. It's because it's only through that struggle, it's only through working through the Shnei Ksuvim HaMachishim Zezeh, the two psukim that seem to contradict each other, until we struggle and discover that harmonizing pasuk, the Kasav HaShlishi Shemachriya Beinehem. And it's not that the two psukim are wrong. We need all three psukim. But we need to find that balance. That's something that only humans could do. It's very fascinating, actually. The Nefesh HaChaim writes, quoting Chazal, that malachim are incapable of handling complexity. We know that in the Shira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so some malachim say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Melo Chol Haaretz Kevodo. They describe God's filling the world. Other malachim say, Baruch Kevod Hashem Mimkomo. Blessed is God from His place, God who is transcendent, who's in heaven, not here. Chazal tell us that the angels can't do both. The angels that say, Baruch Kevod Hashem Mimkomo, who imagine God as transcendent, can't perceive His imminence. The angels that say, Melo Chol Haaretz Kevodo, can't perceive the transcendence. Angels are much smarter than us. They're much quicker than us. Maybe they're a little like AI. But what they can't do is understand the complexity to handle those two ideas, which are seemingly at odds. Which one is it? Where is God? Is He up there or is He down here? The answer, of course, is both. We as humans are capable of understanding how they could both be true simultaneously, of having that balance of Ava and Yira, but not a machine. Rav Schwab has a fascinating insight. He says, why is it that the angels were chastised when they said Shira after the splitting of the sea? After all, the Jews did it as well. So why did God tell the angels, Ma'isa yadei tovim b'yam v'atem omrim shira? But to the Jews, he rejoiced in their song. The answer is very simple, Rav Schwab says. Because angels can only have one reference point. They can't handle that complexity. They can't manage contradictory emotions. So if they're singing songs about the Shira, it means they don't appreciate the tragedy of the loss of human life. But a human being is different. A human being, at the Seder, we sing about our redemption and we take out the drops of wine to remember the suffering of the Makos. A human being can have those contradictory emotions simultaneously. That complexity is possible for humans. That is our job. That's something that AI cannot do. And that's something that we have to make sure that we don't give up. We're out of time. There are more things. But let me just conclude with some takeaways. The first takeaway is obvious. We have to make sure that we don't outsource our humanity. We have to live up to the charge of being human. We have to discover balance, strive for balance. We have to be creative. We have to interpret the Torah. If we're ro'i for paskening, we have to paskin. The second is less obvious. If I have a leaky faucet, so is it okay to ask AI to fix it? Or I'm looking for a recipe or something like that? In cases like this, there's no fundamental problem. If it works, it works. And sometimes, though not always, it works. So is it okay? The answer is we have to consider what are the collateral costs. What happens when we have AI available in our homes and our kids are around? There's a lot of evidence, especially kids and teens, very quickly slip from one type of question, which they ask AI, to another. Many people get sucked into corrosive relationships or seduced into believing garbage. So many people mistake machine for a person. So is banning AI the right solution? I don't know if that's right either. Will we fall behind? Are bans effective anyway? I don't know what the solution is. But I think that we have to think about it. And we have to think about it before it's too late. The internet, social media, caused a lot of harm. I've had so many students cry to me about how they were harmed from these types of things. And by then, at least the way they felt it was already too late. Many countries are now starting to ban social media. Companies are being sued for harm that they knowingly inflicted upon people because they wanted to make money. They didn't quite care about who was being harmed in the meantime. And if we wait to come up with a plan, to come up with a solution, until we realize what the problems are actually going to be, it will have been too late. We don't really know what the problems with AI are going to be. We could guess what some of them are going to be. How it's going to actually harm real people, we don't know. And so we have to be careful about embracing technology too quickly before we understand the harms. The American Psychological Association recently put out a paper warning about some of these dangers. It's easy enough to say, well, they don't apply to me, they don't apply to my kids. First of all, we might be wrong. But even if we're not wrong, we also have to consider the cost to society. The Torah does not allow us to say that if I'm okay, then it's not something I need to worry about. We have to look at the broader consequences. And we don't even know what they are. Fighting superficiality has always been a challenge. Naturally, we judge a book by its cover. We view the world and interpret the Torah in simplistic manners. And all that becomes much more difficult when AI is so common. So the goal of today's shiur is not to offer solutions, but to increase awareness of the problem. It should spur us as individuals and as a community to consider the question and address it. And if it forces us to do that, then even in a small measure, it's been successful. May we all be zocha to use this incredible tool to make the world a better place, to be marbe kavod shamayim. Thank you very much.